Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Title of this is California's Government and the People in the People's Court, because I'm a student of public opinion and believe that whatever our complaints about the voter, national, state, local, we do live in a democracy. And unless people who govern can develop, enjoy, and sustain the trust and confidence of the people they rule, you do not have a sustainable context for policy making. So that's the framework from which I begin. I want to first of all say that my colleague here, Iris Hui, who is a very excellent member of our department, completing her PhD and going on the job market, and she'll be a success. Iris is responsible not only for the slides, but also for doing a lot of the data analysis and putting this talk together for me. So, Iris, thank you very much. And I will say this, one last sort of introductory remark before I get going, and that is that you're going to see data that some of you have already seen. This is data, public opinion data, that comes from the Public Policy of Institute of California polls and the Field Institute polls, and some of this has been already outed, as we say, in the last couple of weeks, but I will take some... along with Henry Brady, who's sitting here, Dean of Graduate School of Goldman School of Public Policy, excuse me, Henry, and also Professor of Political Science. Henry and I participated in a group that wrote some of these questions, so we can claim some authorship. Okay, so let's get started. Those were the days. But as we say, nothing is forever. And actually, navel gazing is a sort of quintessential California trait. And when asked what ails California, or even more dramatically, I read a recent article in a journal called National Affairs called Who Killed California? A familiar prescription actually is, let's bring back the good old days of Pat Brown, when California's version of the New Deal financed economic growth and a flourishing public sector of outstanding universities, modern water projects, freeways, and parks. I want to say, unfortunately, that was then, and this is now, and the California of the 50s and 60s is no more. Iris, maybe the next couple of slides. Okay. And next. Okay. So we have a dramatically larger, a dramatically different, a dramatically more diverse state, and that creates, I think, a dramatically greater problem of getting coherence, cohensus, consensus, and a sense of direction that people will accept and agree to. So, let me then go to the question. What ails California? When you say what ails anything, this calls for a medical diagnosis. So when I was asked to speak about what ails California, first thing I did was I rushed to my primary care physician. And the first thing he said to me, Cal, rename me Cal for California. Relax a little bit. You are not alone. There's a pandemic of illnesses in the American states, cuts in school funding, shrinking state services, layoffs, furloughs, budgetary gimmicks, prayers for stimulus money. They are the rule, not the exception. If you think California is sick, then New York, Arizona, Nevada, and Indiana are in the hospice ward. So, you know, feel good about yourself. You're not as bad off. Well, this was not very satisfying. I said, Schadenfreude is okay, but this is not a cure. I said, you know, doctor, I feel worse. I don't really care how New York feels. And a lot of people agree with me, and I want you to refer me to specialists. Well, we have what is called a Cadillac healthcare plan at the University of California, soon to be taxed perhaps, so before it's taxed, I said, send me to specialists. I just don't want one, I want two opinions. So he says, okay, fine, I write it up. So my first visit to the specialist was to someone called Dr. Carla Marx, and her diagnosis was very straightforward. Said, Cal, you're anorexic. Proposition 13, choke the money supply needed to fund the public sector. Two-thirds rule for passing the budget gives a reactionary minority control over public policy. The initiative process has emasculated representative government and allowed moneyed interests and individuals to shape public policy. Moreover, term limits have squeezed any intelligence out of the legislature. You need to eat more. Eat nutritiously, and all will be well. In other words, this is a very simple problem that money can solve. Well, in serious matters, as I say, you need a second opinion. So I go to my second opinion. Next stop was to the office of Dr. Myra Friedman. And Dr. Myra Friedman, her diagnosis was also one word. He says, you're obese. You're not anorexic. You're obese. You've been eating too much, too richly, and even worse, after you've had a bunch of meals because you had a good year at Gary Danko's and Chez Panisse, you know, now your credit card's overdrawn, you refuse to diet. You sneak outside to overdose on Reese's peanut butter cups. There once was a spending limit, but you found a way around it. Governors Jerry Brown and Gray Davis gave too much power to the public employee unions, so you have to feed them a rich diet as well as taking care of yourself. Says, thank God for the two-thirds rule for the budget and raising taxes, or you may eat yourself into the grave. So we got anorexia or obesity. So, you know, in some sense, in a matter of politics, like in body type, it's a matter of aesthetics or philosophy, not medicine. In some sense, what ails California, I think Chancellor Birgeneau put it this way, boils down to a philosophical central question. What is the role of the state, and how should that role be financed? And this is, in some sense, not a problem that involves tinkering with institutions, but that involves political culture, political belief, political philosophy. Okay. Now, my self-diagnosis, you know, which now with Google you can be your own doctor, is essentially to focus not so much on the particular institutional problems and solutions, but a larger problem, which I sort of, because this is sort of my research over the last 30 years, you can't give up the only thing that you really know, is I think there's, in some sense, a crisis of legitimacy, a crisis of confidence, and we're going to show this in these slides, that for better or worse and for reasons that we could debate and argue over, it's not so much that we could say objectively that representative government in California has failed, although some people say that, but in some sense the public believes it has failed. The public believes it has failed. And I think that when we talk about all these initiatives, most of the main initiatives that we've talked about and that people complain about represent a repudiation of the establishment by the people. And that is, I think, a fundamental issue that confronts the state and that people like Chancellor Birgeneau are confronting directly. And this is, in some sense, as the pendulum swings, we got to stop the pendulum swinging from obesity to anorexia and back. And that is a kind of a difficult kind of problem. So I want to sort of come back to make a few concluding remarks. But before that, let me just, together with Iris, run you through the diagnosis or the public opinion data that leads me to reach this conclusion. And I think Henry and I have spoken about this in a number of contexts, maybe not in identical language, but I think with the same general cast. So, Iris, let's begin. And part one is very simple. Mistrust and dissatisfaction, just the facts. Okay, so let's go very quickly through some familiar slides. First one is people's approval of the governor and the Davis regime and the Schwarzenegger regime. And you can see the red line of disapproval is widening, going up, and the blue line of approval is, you know, slinking its way down to zero. Okay, that's the governor. Let's move on to the governor's partner in government, another branch of government, the legislature. And you can see here that over the last decade, how with just, you know, a little dip there, you get kind of widening gap between approval and disapproval. Okay? Next thing is, how do people feel California is heading? How are we doing in terms of the direction? Is the state on the right track or the wrong track? This very much tracks the economy, the state of the economy. So this is a kind of reflects the macro level economic condition of the nation and the state. But as you can see again, people aren't happy or satisfied with where they think the state is going. Next, we move to something that is more directly political. Do you trust, how much time do you think you can trust the government in Sacramento to do what is right? And so the top line, the red line, is only some of the time or none of the time. And the blue line is about always or most of the time. And once again, we see this huge sort of huge imbalance in the direction of mistrust. Next one is the state government wasteful? Well, this is the PPIC data over time. Over time, yet again, more and more people say that the state wastes a lot of money rather than just some money or not very much money. So the next question is, okay, well, what kind of a government do we want? And here we pose this as populism versus representation. Populism is kind of the label for the initiative process, which Chancellor Bergeron referred to. And what do people feel about the initiative process? For all its flaws, and I think if you poll in detail, people will accept and recognize that there are many flaws in the initiative process. But nonetheless, the level of mistrust of representative institutions is such that the institution of the initiative is popular. Let's go, Iris, with this. Okay, here's a question. You can read it better than I. Do you think the public policy decisions made through the initiative process are better or worse than those made by the government and the legislature? From 2000 to 2008, during this entire decade, the initiative process wins. The initiative process wins, and it wins with Democrats and Republicans and independents. Okay? So that's one question. Another question, similar thing. Who should have the most? This is a slightly different question. Who should have the most influence? And so you give the governor, the legislature, and the green line is the initiative process. And again, over a decade, the green line is the largest line. So more people would say that the people voting through initiative should have more of a say than either the governor and the legislature. The only time when that's not a plurality is more recently among Democrats who favor the legislature, which of course was controlled by the Democrats, right? So you have again this enduring desire on the part of the public, a suspicion of elected officials and a desire for some kind of voice or control. Next one is term limits. Another much another controversial feature imposed by initiative, and which many people believe has kind of weakened the capacity of the legislature to make intelligent policy by removing institutional memory and expertise. But if you ask people, this is recently, when is this? This is just in October 2009. Early this month, you see once again the sort of general view that term limits have helped rather than hurt California. Field poll, May 2008. Would you prefer that the state government deal with the current large budget deficit mostly through spending cuts or through tax increases? Well, you know, we know at the university what spending cuts means, and this is the task that we have to convince the public, because once again, you see that, you know, cut spending over increase taxes is the majority. And if you look at the Democrats, even there, which is somewhat surprising, you know, posed in that dichotomous way, spending cuts win out slightly. Okay, next. This is a more general kind of question, and this goes to the subtitle of my old book, Something for Nothing, when you say, people don't want to pay the taxes, but if you say, you know, would you like to see more services or fewer services? More services tends to dominate, except among Republicans. But here you see a slight difference over a one-year period, perhaps in the context of the recognition of the economic crisis, is that between 08 and 09, the sort of generalized expression for more services actually declined in all groups. Okay? Next, Iris. Okay, this slide, I'm going to go very quickly because it's commonsensical. It says, of the people who think there is a lot of waste in government, as opposed to there's not much waste in government, they're less willing to say we want more services. So obviously, this kind of almost, you know, logic, common sense, that if you think there's a lot of waste and you can get the same level of services anyway, you're not going to advocate, in some sense, increasing services. Okay, next. Here's a sort of a different question. This is not from the Field Institute. This is for the it's a reprise on how the budgetary crisis should be solved. And here the blue line is not just services versus taxes, but a mix of spending cuts and tax increases versus just spending cuts or just tax increases. And you see that among the Democrats, there's a substantial majority in favor of some kind of mix, whereas and the independents share that. And among the Republicans, you have this very, very strong pro tax cuts or opposition to any tax increases. This is familiar. This was replayed in the state legislature. The partisan divide there is reflected here in public opinion. Do you think fundamental changes are needed? And, you know, by a substantial, you know, margin of 15% margin or so, people say, yes, we need fundamental change. And here the Democrats are more in favor of fundamental change. Independents or people who register with neither party are. And the Republicans are pretty evenly divided on this. So, you know, 42% of the Republicans in the abstract say, yes, fundamental change is needed. Okay? And here are the sort of the two competing models, which we'll hear about later on, sort of change through a series of initiatives or change through a constitutional convention. And again, you see us, you know, either way in some sense. I don't think people view these as alternatives. They're posed as alternatives. They're posed as alternatives. And so in that context, maybe more people will say, okay, we want a constitutional convention. But I think, you know, both mechanisms for change get receptivity. Okay. But now let's move to the specific proposals that are percolating around there. The first is the notorious two-thirds rule that Proposition 13 includes for increasing state taxes. Getting rid of the two-thirds rule? At this point, tough sell. Tough sell to all parties. This is a poll conducted just 3 weeks ago. 60% of the Democrats don't want to give up that rule. Okay? Now, this is kind of really a startling figure. I think, Henry, we both were probably surprised at that outcome. Next one, Iris, is this is a question that we actually invented. So you could say, you know, one of the problems with the state constitution is it's so easy to amend by initiative. You know, two-thirds to pass the budget, two-thirds to raise any individual tax, but just 50% of the voters, you know, can amend the Constitution in radical ways. So why not make the process of amending the Constitution more difficult, like the federal Constitution? And so we said, well, let's try a two-thirds rule for initiatives that, you know, that are constitutional initiatives. And this is favored. Okay, here's a reform that is favored across the board. Very, very, this is probably a new idea. People haven't been asked about it before. Maybe they haven't thought about it. There's no sort of partisan queuing on this that people have. So this is kind of a, you know, their first answer. But this is, I think, quite another compelling figure. And next, okay, the simple majority to pass the state budget. And this is more closely divided. And this is, again, a partisan division on this proposal. Okay? So what we did was we said, okay, there were these three majority rule-related ideas, right? Three separate questions. What was the pattern of, how do people see across these different proposals? And I'm not going to go down the line, but just look the top two figures. The second one is the status quo. Two-thirds for state taxes, two-thirds budget, but add. You know, the status quo, 17% of the total are in the status quo. But the largest single number is for retaining the two-thirds supermajorities that we have and adding that supermajority for the constitutional amendment. So with that pattern of public opinion, you can see that proposals that sort of center on the seemingly compelling democratic idea of simple majority rule runs into resistance among a significant segment of the public. Okay? And that goes back to my original point, which I'll now come to the conclusion here, and maybe there'll be a minute or two for questions. Okay, Iris, next slide. And this just says, okay, let's compare people who said we need a fundamental change and people who say no, a fundamental change is not needed. And let's look at how they feel on all of these specific things. And here you see the dilemma of achieving change even where change is desired in the abstract, because you have important partisan divisions, obviously, among people who agree that fundamental change is needed. Okay? You have, on the Democratic side, those who want change, they want the split role, they want more services, they want majority rule as far as taxes and budgeting is concerned. The Republicans, even though they say they want fundamental change, essentially they want the status quo in most things, and you do get a consensus on pay-as-you-go budgeting and on this issue of making it harder to pass a constitutional amendment by initiative, okay? So you see this sort of pattern of public opinion, which now let me very quickly summarize, okay? And I'll conclude. See, I didn't want to say anything concrete here because I didn't want to be held to something that is, you know, inscribed in a PowerPoint slide that people can raise up and say, aha, this is what he said. But here, look, let's just summarize this. One, there is an appetite for change and there is dissatisfaction. Secondly, however, there's a very limited consensus on what to do, and there remains in the public a lot of evidence of partisan gridlock that has to be overcome. I think these data show quite clearly a crisis of trust, a crisis of confidence, and that the public has, in some sense, saying that representative government in California has failed. Is that a fair judgment? I don't know. Is the legislature doing what their constituents want? And this is the outcome. And here you get a standard kind of problem in political science. Each individual representative, each assembly person, is doing what is rational for them. They are serving their constituents. They can't lose, actually, given the way redistricting operates. You have all of these safe seats. But each representative is doing what is in their individually rational interests. But the collective, the outcome is collective irrationality. So you have the marriage of individual political rationality and collective irrationality, where you get the state of the University of California essentially flattened in a decade, and you get, you know, this other thing. So, what does this all mean? This is all diagnosis. I'm not in the solutions business, thank God, but only in the diagnosis business. You know, you go to another specialist, and we have many of them here. I have a lot of brilliant but unfeasible ideas, which I'm not going to... which I'm not going to propose. But I will say this. For better or worse, we live in a democracy, and in the end, voters are going to make significant decisions. And so we've had 30 years in which the voters have repudiated the establishment. The idea of a constitutional convention, the idea of engaging in a discourse with the public on a variety of fronts of what is needed and how to do it, I think is absolutely essential. But I think that any solution is going to have to cope with this sort of deep-seated populist mistrust of what has been going on until now. So let me stop with that. I don't know if we have 5 minutes for questions. I guess I'd be willing to answer some of that.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.